Hello everyone and welcome to the MMA Torchcast for September 24th, 2007. This is the UFC 76 round table with another small table starring myself and Jerry Catalane. Jerry, how's it going?
I'm feeling awful in shock after the last card.
Yeah, heck of a card though, huh?
Lots of questions.
More
questions than answers, I think, after watching that mess last night. Holy moly.
All right. Well, I haven't gotten to see all the prelims yet. You saw a couple of them, right?
I saw a couple. As I mentioned, the on-demand service was lagging a little this morning, so I managed to get a couple of the smaller fights. And to be fair, I saw Junk and Wallish and Jackson Clemente, neither of which were what I would consider barn burners by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
Certainly nothing in terms of discussion content
as much
as the later televised show.
Nasty heel hook there by Wallish, though, huh?
Well, good. It was a good thing he took it down because Junk was clearly having the better of the stand-up. It was good on Wallish that he changed his game plan and took it down. It was a vicious heel hook. I mean, no question about it. But
he was limping out of the ring.
Junk was limping out of the ring, but I thought that for taking the fight on late notice, and I thought he took it right to Wallish pretty well. I think we'll see Junk again.
I
thought he put on a pretty entertaining couple of minutes, but
They did.
Wallish took him down, Wallish took him down, and that was just nasty, nasty, nasty.
Yeah.
Nasty. So good on Wallish, but I don't, you know, as far as mid tier heavyweights, I think he's got a little more to show.
Yeah. Speaking of Wallish, I think, and this is getting off topic, and we won't probably do that too much. Yeah. But I think if you want to get a guy to showcase Andrei Arlovsky, get him in there with Wallish.
Yeah.
That'd be a fun fight to watch.
Yeah, I think it'd be a fun fight to watch. I think, to continue going off topic, I think as far as Arlovsky goes, I think it's time to shuffle up the heavyweight division and Arlovsky needs to be fighting the top tier to, see if he gets another crack at the belt sometime or another.
Yeah, you ain't joking. They need to get Arlovsky back on my television screen.
Yep, absolutely.
I'd be very upset. Okay, well, let's jump right into this thing. Should we start at the top or the bottom, you think?
Up to you. You're the host.
All right. Well, let's just go with the Liddell Jardine fight to start off with.
Okay.
That's what everybody's talking about. We'll start there.
I'm not sure what that now, is everybody's talking about, but it's
right.
one of the top two topics for sure.
That's for sure. Well, we'll start with this one. Now we had, of course, Jardine taking the split decision. What was your take? Give me your take on the fight, just overall, to start off with.
If the six or eight people that have been listening to our podcasts will recall, I was on the Jardine war wagon all the way up until I wrote my column for the site, and it was at that point that I really kind of sat back and bought into the old school mentality, which I try to keep away from, and that our old school mentality was that Liddell had been unbeaten for so long, in devastating fashion usually, highlight reel knockouts, and he got caught, and it happens to everybody, but clearly this would be his opportunity to have a tailor-made opponent that was going to come right at him, and surely, Chuck would slip some angles, land a few right hands, and he'd be back on the gravy train again for a big fight with Wanderlei Silva. And the more I read that, the more I ended up believing it. Not that I didn't think Jardine could win, but I just thought that's the way the fight would play out. And as it turns out, once again, don't believe anything you read. It is better to go with your own opinions.
Yeah.
It truly is, because I don't think there was any doubt that Jardine was probably a better all-around MMA fighter to begin with. However, the question was, could he hang in there and fight with Liddell? And the answer is he could on his own terms, which were, land a leg kick and a hook, back away. Land a leg kick and a hook, back away. If Chuck hits you a couple times, back away in circle. And it was a very basic strategy, and it worked all night. And
yeah.
What surprised me the most was that Liddell had no answer for this. That Liddell just stalked him, held that right hand, you know, cocked up like a big mace, and that was it. And there was no, there didn't seem to be any suggestion from the corner saying you're losing this fight, you need to change this by either, you know, nullifying the kicks, shooting for a takedown, closing the distance, something. You know, it's funny how game plan has become the watchword in MMA in the last 6 months, especially with the advent, you know, and continued reign of Randy Couture in the heavyweight division.
Yep.
I think game plan would have saved Chuck Liddell last night, and he didn't have one.
Yeah. We talked about this a little bit earlier off air, but that was the main reason I went with Jardine, was because, you know, and he said it at the end of the fight, Jardine did. Chuck has one way of fighting, and that's what I game planned for. That's what we game planned for. We came in here expecting to see what we saw, and it's exactly what happened. You know, he trains down there with Greg Jackson, which is one of the better camps, and they knew what Chuck was going to do. I mean, he's done it his whole time in the UFC, and we did this before he fought Rampage, before I stupidly picked Liddell to beat Rampage, we ran down all his opponents that he knocked out, you know, between his last loss to Rampage or between the first and second loss to Rampage.
Right.
And I'm going to do it right now again. Tito Ortiz, Vernon White, Randy Couture, Jeremy Horn, Randy Couture again, Babalu, and Tito Ortiz again. Now, which of those guys is going to stand in front of Chuck Liddell and has any chance of striking with him?
None.
You know, and the last guy that did that was Rampage.
Right.
You know? I mean, yeah, Alistair Overeem did it to a certain extent, but you know, he was able to take out Overeem.
But in that fight, Overeem was more than acquitting himself well.
Yeah,
if I recall the fight. You know, just off the top of my head here, Overeem, I think actually you could say was winning the fight until Chuck took him out.
The difference was that Chuck was able to weather the storm, and Overeem wasn't.
Right.
That was
good rationale. That was,
you
know, and especially to stick with it, which, again, I mean, you know, you read all the sites and all the internet information that there is out there, and so much of it is dominated by people who have been watching the sport, you know, for four or five or longer years, who, quote, know, end quote, everything.
Yeah.
And what I've seen over the last year is nobody knows anything.
You're exactly right.
And you have these myths and legends that have been perpetuated through the internet that are not playing out in real time anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Chuck Liddell argument to win the fight was a good argument. It was good enough to make me change my mind against something that my gut said wasn't going to happen. But in retrospect, you know, in retrospect, you could see the fight playing out the way it did, especially with Jardine being known for a guy that's going to stand, has that goofy, herky-jerky, he looks like he's sitting on a spring stand.
Yeah, I'll tell you, and that's what I was talking about in my coverage when I said, you know, this is the goofiest striking matchup I've ever seen, because Chuck has that unorthodox style, too, and these two just look like a couple of weirdos.
Right.
Got out there.
Right. It was weird to watch. Finally, when you finally got to the fight after really some solid technical fighting through the rest of the card, and then these two come out. I mean, I've said this before. You know, Chuck Liddell does not look like one of the best light heavyweights in the world if you look at him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you look at him, he just doesn't look like, he doesn't have that, I don't know what to say, that refined six pack, sculpted look that you would expect in that, you know, in mixed martial arts, and yet there he is. And then you got Jardine, that he just looks like a big goofy guy when he's out there. He's a big guy. I mean, he's relatively tall. I mean, he's very muscular. And then he gets down on that crouch and bounces around like a, he almost looks like the Notre Dame fighting leprechaun, you know, the way he bounces around there. And it's just funny to watch.
Yeah,
but it was worse to watch. Chuck had no answer. I mean, Chuck, and the leg kicks he took were brutal. I mean, it sounded like he was kicking the side of beef when he kept landing those shots.
His side was a mess.
I was impressed Liddell was able to finish the fight, truthfully.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, you know, and you said it all, and I said it after UFC 69 with Sarah and St. Pierre. Nobody knows anything. And, you know, Dana White, I love Dana White, okay? I really do. But the guy, you know, he goes out there and he rips Pride for sticking Vanderlei Silva in there with Dan Henderson before they could have had their money match with Liddell. And he goes and does the exact same thing
right.
with Jardine. I mean, if you're gonna put Liddell in there with somebody you want to showcase, put him in there with a grappler. That's what he's been showcasing against for
right.
all these years.
Right.
Put him in there with Wilson Gouveia. You know,
right.
don't put him in with Jason Lambert because I think Jason Lambert's got a good shot of knocking him out.
Right.
You know?
Right. You're right. You're right. Although I'll say this, though. The Henderson-Silva fight was a good fight.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was a great fight to watch. I mean,
absolutely.
I wouldn't criticize that matchup at all. I mean, I'm not a matchmaker and I'm not looking forward to the big payday. But
yeah.
right now, I don't think you can put any of these guys in against anybody if you're trying to save somebody for a big payday.
Exactly. And that's
nobody
the whole
knows
thing.
Anything. I mean, I don't
that's
care
the whole
who we
thing.
Are. You know,
if you wanted, you know, if he wanted to save Liddell for Silva, then Liddell doesn't fight right now. I know they're buddies, and Liddell wanted to fight this month, but you know, if he wanted that money fight, then the smart thing to do was to keep him off of pay per view
right.
and have him fight Silva right then.
I think the funny thing is I think that, and I don't know this. I'm not an insider, and I would have no way of knowing this, but I'm willing to bet you that when they made this fight, they thought they were giving Liddell, you know, a can.
Well, they absolutely
you know,
thought that.
If
you looked at the UFC website building up to this event, it had, you know, article after article about Liddell working his way back to the title. Liddell is taking the
right.
first step in his quest towards whatever,
right.
you know, and look what happened.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even Rua.
Yeah.
We haven't gotten to that fight yet, but this is another one. This is Forrest Griffin was going to be his gatekeeper fight into the UFC.
Yep.
And I mean.
Yep.
I don't think anybody saw that coming. I mean, I think there were some people, there were a lot of people, I think, that picked, a lot being a relative lot, there were a fair number of people that picked Jardine to win, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure
yeah.
there were very many that were picking Griffin to win at all.
Yeah, there's not
I mean,
there, yeah. Comparatively, yeah, there were more people looking at Jardine than there were at Griffin, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question now is, you know, who's next for either of these guys? I mean,
yeah,
you being an old school fan, I know you want to see Silva Liddell still. Silva was
oh, yeah.
pissed. I mean, Silva looked Silva looked despondent. I mean, just despondent.
He wants Liddell.
Well, he'll get him.
I hope so.
He just saw a lot of money go out the window, I think.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, the thing is, and Dana White said this before, Chuck Liddell is like the old Mike Tyson in MMA. People are going to pay to watch him fight no matter what. I mean, they're just going to. And the comparison is actually really apt right now because – people aren't scared of him, aren't scared of his striking anymore, like they
no.
were. You know, he was feared, and Mike Tyson was too at first until he lost,
right.
and you know, and then it was kind of downhill from there. And Chuck's on his way down. You know, he's 37. That's okay.
He'll be 38 at the end of the year.
Yeah, he's still a top 10 light heavyweight right now. I mean, you know, to me anyway. But
he is. I think he is. I mean, but he's not. I don't think he's top 5 anymore.
No, probably not. But yeah, I still think that fight has some appeal to it, especially if they can get clips of Silva out there in the mainstream and what he can do. Because
right.
good grief, I mean the clips of him and Pride are just brutal.
Oh, absolutely. Silva's highlight reel is probably one of the few guys that's better than Liddell's.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, seriously. I guess
you
I
watch.
Guess,
go ahead.
Jinx. I think. I think the fight needs to happen just for the historical significance of it as opposed to the relevance of it right now.
Yeah.
I mean, Silva has not been yet tarnished with with the UFC brush yet. but you got to wonder. I mean, no one would have picked Shogun to lose to Griffin, not by submission.
No.
I mean,
no.
you would have got the odds on that would have been astronomical.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not sure who you match Silva up with in his first fight. I mean, clearly, you know, he was supposed to fight Liddell in December, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
That's not happening.
See, I think it still should.
Not in December.
I really do.
I think Chuck's going to be ready to fight again in 3 months? 2 months?
Well, I mean, I shouldn't say in December. That should be his next fight.
See, I think I'd rather see Silva get in the cage sooner rather than later. I'd hate to see Silva's first fight in the cage be against Liddell. I just think he's still have a fight eventually. I mean, he's due.
Yeah.
He's been off long enough that I think...
That's true. He has been off
time
for a while.
It was a big deal. You know, it was a big deal. The signing was a big, big deal. You know, Dana White looked like a kid who just got a new bike for Christmas.
Yeah.
Big fights coming. I think we need to see Silva in the ring. So, I think we still need the ring. We still need to see Silva in the cage. I think December is a good time as any. I would like to see Silva against Machida.
Oh, man. I would like to see that, too, but there's no way they make that fight before Liddell.
I would like to see that. I would, too.
But there's no way they throw anyone that they have plans for, they're not throwing them in there with Machida anytime soon.
Well, I mean, what are you going to do with Machida, though?
I don't know, because he decisions guys to death. I mean, look at Nakamura. Nakamura is a pretty good fighter. He'd be better suited at 85, probably. But
Nakamura looked like a big doughy.
Yeah.
he looked like a small. He looked like he walks around every day at 205, as opposed to someone like Machida, who clearly does not.
Yeah, he would be better suited at 85. And Nakamura he's a pretty good fighter too. Didn't show up there. But
I've seen his resume. It's the funny thing with Machida though. He makes everybody look bad.
That's the thing. That's the thing.
Everybody look bad, and it's not in an embarrassing bad way, just in a neutral, vanilla, what else is on TV sort of way.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why they don't want to put anyone in there with him that they have plans for, because you know he decisions them to death, and then what do you do with them?
Yeah.
You know,
I'd still like to see what Silva would do against somebody like that he could.
Oh, for sure.
Somebody that probably is not going to knock him out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, be
yeah.
a safe, quote-unquote, safe fight for him. I mean,
someone that he would have to chase to finish.
Right. And, you know,
yeah.
which kind of fits into the classic Wanderlei mode anyway, who is
yeah.
naturally a pursuer.
Yeah.
This is equally off topic. You know, I mean, you're going to have Silva wait for Liddell to come back. I wouldn't see that fight happen until sometime February-ish, March.
Yeah, probably true.
Fight. So, I mean, I just can't see him holding Silva that long.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right on that. And I wonder. Well, let's look at what's that?
So who's he fight then?
Yeah. Let's look at the Shogun and Griffin fight. And go ahead and give me your take on this one, and then we'll sort out this mess that is the light heavyweight division.
I think we kind of touched on this already. I don't think anybody picked Forrest to win by submission. Much less picked Forrest to win at all.
Yeah,
I was in that majority that I just thought that I knew Forrest would put on a good show because he's that kind of fighter that,
yep.
you know, makes it entertaining for the fans. He's not afraid to get in there and scrap. He'll go to the ground. Pretty well-rounded, although I don't think he gets the credit for being as well-rounded as he is. Doesn't have a lot of pop in his hands, comparatively speaking to a lot of guys in the light heavyweight division, but, you know, gets in there and bangs. And but, you know, Rua came in with... still has such a impressive resume, an impressive list of guys he's beaten, from the shoot box and just all the you know props in the world. And you know what happens? He gets tapped in the third round.
Yeah.
I thought Forrest fought a very tactically well thought out fight, and I'm wondering. Again, we went back to game plan, and I'm wondering if one of the camps that if you're an upcoming professional fighter that you want to get into isn't Extreme Couture.
Holy smoke. I mean, what can you say about Extreme Couture? I mean, my gosh.
Game plan. And
I tell you what.
They're turning MMA really into probably more of what it was meant to be in the very beginning, that
yeah.
not only a physical contest, but a mental one as well.
Oh, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
They had Forrest so primed to fight the right fight against Hua that he won. I was
yeah.
very surprised. The part I was most disappointed about, it's not so much the Forrest won, which I'm good with that. He is one of my favorite fighters. I can't help it. He's a goof. You gotta love a goof in MMA.
Oh yeah, sure.
I was kinda surprised at how Shogun was gassed in the second round. And I don't understand that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because he clearly looked gassed to me 2-3 minutes into the second.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering where that came from, because I thought the pace was good. I mean, it was a pretty good pace. It wasn't a Clay Guida sort of pace.
Right.
It was a good pace. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, in Pride, you fight a 10-minute first round, if I'm not mistaken. What's he doing gassing halfway through the second?
Well, let's roll down memory lane here, if we will. And I've got the Fight Finder up here, so I'm cheating a little bit, but that's okay.
Go ahead.
2005, which was breakout year. We got, that was his big year. He'd beat Rampage, he'd beat Nogueira, he'd beat Alistair Overeem, Ricardo Arona, all 2005. Huge resume year for him.
Right.
And if we look at those fights, Rampage, 4 minutes, 47 seconds into the first round. Nogueira, he went to the decision and gassed in that one, but still ended up winning the decision. Overeem, 6 minutes, 42 seconds into the first. Arona, 2:54 into the first. Kevin Randleman, after that, 2:35 in the first. And then we remember the Shockwave fight in 2006 where he fought Nakamura, where he also won a decision, and both guys were so gassed, it was ridiculous. And then Overeem again in 3:37 of the first. So Shogun, I mean, had I thought about this, and I thought that he was just going to go in there and beat Forrest in a couple of minutes, so gas wouldn't matter anyway. But his gas tank has always been suspect.
Okay, I accept that. Good point. Well said. But you're a professional fighter, okay?
Yeah.
You're a professional fighter. This is what you do.
Okay. Yeah.
Like me going to work and not understanding pneumonia, but I can handle heart attacks. You're a professional fighter. You should be prepared to fight 15 minutes, three rounds. You should be cardio well enough that you can fight at a reasonable pace for four rounds if need be.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
Fighter, you don't game plan, you don't prep for a guy that, well, I'm going to take him out in 2 minutes, so I guess that's all I'm going to plan. It just doesn't make sense to me. That's what I was disappointed with the most. I thought that despite him gassing in the second round, he probably won the second round.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think, the point I'm trying to make there is that maybe it shouldn't have been such a surprise. I mean, Randy Couture knew it. You know, that's why he went out and said Forrest Griffin was going to win all three rounds, which he did. And then, that's probably what he was looking at. You know, he was looking at going out there, putting on a furious pace like we know that Griffin can. Griffin, and I don't know if you noticed, but Griffin dwarfed Shogun in that ring.
Yeah, he did.
He was huge.
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
Shogun didn't look in the best shape either.
No.
You know, on top of that. So, you know, I think Couture and Griffin took into account if you can avoid getting knocked out or submitted in the first, in the first round, then you're going to be all right. And that's what he did. I mean,
he did it well, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you could see the air go out of Shogun when he landed those elbows, the one that split open Forrest, and Forrest just trying to grin, like, God, I'm bleeding again.
Yeah.
And he got up, and he was still bouncing around the ring, and you could just see Shogun look and think, you could almost read his mind, like, what have I got myself into?
Yeah.
Here's a guy, Griffin wasn't in my top 10. I mean, he was around the bottom somewhere. I mean, he was knocking at the door, but he wasn't top 10.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know anybody, I don't know any major site that didn't have Shogun as their number one light heavyweight, title or no title.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he was
and it was probably deserved up until then with what he had done. But
he didn't even lose a split decision. He got tapped.
Yeah.
He got tapped with 10 seconds to the round. He got tapped. I mean,
and he gave that thing up. He gave that choke up.
He gave up. He just gave up. I mean, he threw in the towel. Again, it's the old school mentality. The old school mentality. And the old school in this case being what? Like you said, 05 was his breakout year. It's only 2 years.
Yeah.
It makes you think that the window of fame, realistically, isn't very big in MMA.
Well, and I hope, because Shogun's a lot of fun to watch.
Absolutely.
Game. I hope that this is going to be a really good thing for him because, his gas has never come back to him before. This is the first time. So, I mean, I hope that, it could have been in an early fight. I don't know. I haven't seen anything, before his Pride days. But I hope that, that gets him to train more cardio. I mean, I hope it's a kind of a Tito Ortiz thing where Ortiz completely gassed out against Frank Shamrock, and then decided he was never going to gas out again. And, you know, I mean, he has, but, you know, not to that extent anyway.
Right.
And Shogun, I really hope that that's kind of a turnout for him. Shogun's only 25.
Well, I was going to bring that up. You know, he's young, and, I mean, it's not like his career is over, but...
Yeah, no.
Not the way you want to start in the UFC.
No, and there is something to be said for getting used to the cage. I mean, you know, they've said it over and over again. Rampage came in there with no problem in the cage, but he'd fought in the cage before. He wanted King of the Cage, fought in WFA. These guys have never fought in the cage. You know, Krokop and Shogun and Nogueira, all those guys, they haven't fought in the cage before.
I guess I don't... I need someone to explain that to me, what the difference is. I mean, I understand the difference. Like,
yeah.
You know, but I mean, like, what the... Is there an emotional difference? Is there a mental difference? Is it like landmarks?
Right.
Like landmarks in a real, like, you know, playing sports, you know, if you're on a field, there are certain landmarks on a field that you just intrinsically know after a while.
Is yeah.
It a comfort measure sort of thing? Because that makes no sense to me. I could see,
yeah,
I could see if you're, you know, how the cage is better for you stylistically.
Yeah.
You know, if you're more of a grappler.
Yeah.
You know, but.
And I don't know either. All I know is I heard that quote from Randy Couture, and I believe
yeah.
everything Randy Couture says.
And Randy, we trust, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
I have to reference your blog. You can't even pick against Randy anymore, and you can't even pick against his picks. I thought that was good. You brought up Tito Ortiz. To me, you know, these upsets, that opens the door for Tito.
Yeah,
and if Tito
it does,
because he's got Rashad too coming up here.
Yep.
If he beats Rashad, and if he can do it convincingly, my goodness, Tito Ortiz is back in the picture again, isn't he?
Yeah.
You can't say.
I would say he is.
You can't say he isn't. I mean.
Yeah, he beat Forrest Griffin, although it was a BS decision, really. But.
It was a BS decision, but he certainly competed with. He had Forrest in more trouble than Shogun did.
That's for sure. That's for doggone sure.
I mean, would you? Let's say Ortiz beats Evans. And then Ortiz Shogun.
I'd love to watch that fight. Shogun. I think Shogun needs to take some time off and work on his cardio. I really do.
It's essentially October, so we're gonna
yeah.
Shogun. You know, he got tapped, so I mean he's gonna have a little medical suspension, but not a ton.
Yeah.
You know, we're gonna see Shogun back in March or April.
Yeah, I think that'd be good.
There you go. If he wins.
Yeah. Well, let's look at the light heavyweight division. Rankings, as far as rankings, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's a complete cluster mess right now.
Yes, it is, which is why you can participate on the message board right now.
Exactly, yes. if you don't know what Jerry's talking about, check out the front page of MMATorch.com. We've got an open invite to rank the UFC division.
Rank UFC fighters, that's right.
Okay, yes.
So it is a mess, though.
It is a mess, but let's look at this question. How do you determine, first of all, who gets the next title shot, and who do you think it should be?
Okay.
I mean, let me throw this out there. Do we have any more contender fights? Do we have time for any more contender fights before they want to put Rampage back in there? And I would say he'll probably be back in about February.
Yeah, I don't think you do.
Yeah.
I don't think you do. I think that Jackson's next fight is going to be kind of a he's ready to go sort of fight.
Yeah.
Let's look at it this way. I've heard a lot of Machida fans over and over and over on multiple boards all about Machida. All right, now, no, he is not the most interesting fighter to watch by far, but he's 11-0.
Yeah.
11-0 is 11-0, and he just
yeah.
won a fight.
Yeah.
And if you look at it, Silva's not going to come out and just fight for the title. Liddell just lost 2 in a row. So you can't really go with him. I'm sure that the plans for Shogun to fight Jackson are now been kind of sidelined until he gets a win or two under his belt.
Yep.
You really can't have Forrest Jardine 2 because that'll take
not before, yeah, not before the next fight, no.
Before the next fight. Houston Alexander is kind of a flash in the pan right now. I like him. But as Josh
yep.
pointed out the last podcast, we haven't seen a whole lot of him. But
yep.
still, he's won a couple.
Yeah.
Do you throw him in there against Jackson just to give him a shot?
I don't think he's won enough fights to throw him in there with Jackson.
I agree, but right now we're
yeah.
looking. I mean, I'm trying to think of somebody besides Machida you could put in there against Jackson on short, on 2 or 3 months' notice.
Well, I think there's two guys. I think there's two guys who.
I'm trying to go down through my list here. Who else you could throw in there? Ortiz has got Evans coming up, so those two are out.
Yeah.
Throw me your two guys.
The two guys I've got are Forrest and Jardine. You can't have them fight again, but I think you've got to give the title shot to one of them. I mean, they beat, really, the number one and the number three guy.
Yeah, they did.
And if you look back, you know, Jardine beat Forrest. I think by process of elimination, I think you got to give it to Jardine.
Yeah. And so you figure that fight in January.
January, February, yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
but,
I couldn't argue with that. I mean, I don't think there are any bad. I don't think there are any bad choices right now. Because to me, Machida hasn't fought anybody yet, really, to earn a fight.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the plus side of what you said. I don't think there's any real. I mean, it's you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Because whatever they do with the next contender, he's going to be criticized and he's going to be praised. They're going to say, "How can you put whoever in with Jackson?" Or how can you put whoever in with Jackson? Because nobody is on a winning streak right now that has beaten significant competition.
Right. I would lean towards it's a good argument. I think because you got to fight somebody.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. He's got to fight somebody, and for their, you know, they've got a very tight timeline with their fights. And you know,
what
you have
just,
time
what
to
if, what if they
thing.
Just
and
what
if, this is where it comes back to bite them over and over again to overlook fights. You know, they overlooked Jardine, they overlooked Griffin. You know, they're looking for showcases, and you can't bet on showcases anymore. You know, if 2007 has taught us anything, it's that you can't bet on showcases. You can't. No. I mean, Houston Alexander, Sogaju, you know, Griffin, Jardine, you know.
Yeah.
These guys that get beat in their own showcase fights come back and beat other guys in their showcase fights.
Yeah,
you know?
Gonzaga is a classic example.
Gonzaga, yeah. You know?
Couture to an extent. You know, I'm not sure anybody really figured on Couture winning the title when he did.
I did.
Yeah, well, I mean, many. That way. Many. But even though, I mean, but even so, Couture really came out of nowhere to take that title shot.
Yeah, yeah.
He literally came out of retirement to take the title shot. So, I mean, I think I made this point in my blog that, you know, I think with them signing all these Pride stars, is it really? I wonder if they're reconsidering signing all these Pride guys when they're coming over here and getting beat.
You know, I don't think they should be reconsidering it. I don't think they should because, I mean, for one thing, we talked about the cage, and you know, there's a little bit. Maybe there's something to that. Maybe there's not. I don't know. But
Sean, clearly there is. I mean,
yeah,
I can't believe all these Pride guys. There's too much of a trend for there not to be something. Either they're all overrated.
Yeah.
And that this whole myth of Pride superiority is completely wrong, or there is something else that is causing most of these guys to lose their first fight, or look less than impressive. I mean, Big Nog, you know, Herring. I mean, just you can go on down the list. I mean, there are very few guys that have come over and made their name, continued their reputation, if you will, the way they did it in Japan.
Yeah, although I think one guy that's overlooked, ironically, that did come from Pride, even though he had a fight before he got to the UFC, is Rampage. You know, Rampage was a Pride guy.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not saying well. Well, even so, I mean, it took Rampage a round or two to get warmed up when he fought.
Yeah, it did.
I mean, he admitted to being tentative.
Sure.
But even so, you know, there's got to be something. There must be some explanation.
I agree. I think there is. I think the next year, I think 2008 is going to be a really exciting year for especially the light heavyweight division because hopefully you get Shogun coming into his own again. Hopefully you get Silva coming back. Silva's in his prime. He's only 31. You know,
right.
The two knockout losses notwithstanding, he's in his prime. So, you know, you've got that coming. You know, who knows what Liddell's going to do. He's talked about retiring. You know, you've got guys up and comers like Jason Lambert, Rashad Evans, Wilson Gouveia.
Right.
Those guys. I mean, it's going to be 2008 is going to be a huge year for light heavyweights.
Right, I agree. Because the division's a mess. It's like the
welterweight. Yeah, oh, it's an absolute mess.
The welterweight division still is.
Yeah.
You know, so all
Good. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, those divisions are a mess. But what are the two most exciting divisions in MMA right now?
Oh, right now? Well, before last night, I would say lightweights and welterweights.
Yeah.
And now, light heavy is right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so basically, basically next September, we'll see the Ultimate Fighter 7 with light heavyweights and they'll delay the
yeah.
title. And that's the next. Freaking mess that is. Anyway.
Yeah, it's great stuff though. I mean, it's as much of a mess as it is to wrap our heads around. At the end of the day, we get good fights.
It's great. It's great for discussion, and really, what it tells you is that really there are no bad fights.
That's the great thing.
There really,
I mean,
no
you've got. You've got. I mentioned both of these guys already a couple of times, but Gouveia and Lambert coming up. They're going to be fighting at, I think, what was it, 78? 70, is it 77? I can't remember.
78, I think.
But that's, I mean, that sounds like a great fight.
Yep.
You know, that's going to be something that helps these guys to shake out where they are in the division.
Yeah.
You know, there's just, everybody wins.
Well, everybody wins, and also I think some of these top-tier guys with losses like this start coming back to the pack.
Yeah.
It just jumbles everything back up a little bit, so you don't have, like, a middleweight situation where you have Anderson Silva,
and everybody else.
Then Rich Franklin, then kind of everybody else.
Yeah, well, it's going to be Silva and everybody else after he beats Franklin next
yeah.
month. But, of course, I say that. And
well,
how many times now?
Well, when you start asking that question, though, I think you start, nowadays we have to start looking at, well, where is Franklin training? You know, who is he training with?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because I think that is becoming elemental into winning a fight. That you're not
Absolutely.
Supposed to win. I don't think anyone's expecting Franklin. I don't understand how anyone. Let me qualify all of that. I'm not sure many are expecting Franklin to win the fight.
Yeah.
Based on his last performance.
Right.
Having said that, if he has the right game, everybody has a game plan to win.
Yeah.
If he has the right game plan, there's no reason why you can't game plan and beat Anderson Silva.
Yeah. 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 No, and at the same time, there's no reason he can't game plan against whoever's coming in and beat them.
Right.
You know,
right, like
so,
I'm still not picking Rich to win.
Oh, I know. But that's what makes the sport so much fun.
Right. Right.
You know, there's no walkthroughs anymore.
No.
Even when you think there's one.
You might as well. you might, now that Silva can't fight or probably isn't going to fight Liddell in December, you might as well set him up to fight against. You might as well set him up to fight Rampage.
Yeah.
Why not? You might as well. He's your most ballyhooed signee in a while because you run the same risk, right? I mean, Silva's another one of these guys that have been brought in to compete for the title.
Yeah.
I mean, you're running out of Ultimate Fighters to fight these guys against.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
I mean,
oh, and that...
Who's going to fight Stephen Bonner? I mean...
Yeah. And I have to correct myself before I forget. That Lambert and Gouveia fight was supposed to happen actually on Saturday, but Gouveia hurt himself, so that didn't happen. Anyway. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Light heavyweight, great division. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch it shake out. And let's hit that last fight again, Machida and Nakamura, before we get to the other ones, just to make it a light heavyweight, picture.
Sweet.
What was your take on this one?
Boring. the most exciting part of it, or interesting part of it, was Nakamura coming down in a parasol. I enjoyed the entrance. I wish you would, I want to say I wish you would put on more of a show in the ring.
Yeah.
I think that against Machida and in the state that Nakamura was, Nakamura looked like a full fledged 205 in that he looks like he's always 205.
Yeah. Yeah.
He probably had a couple, it looked like he had a couple burgers to make 205, as opposed to where Machida, cut 15 pounds to make 205. Because when he got into the ring, Machida looked much bigger than Nakamura and clearly was able to dictate pace. And when Machida dictates pace, he's going to win. Just because he's a good enough defensive fighter, smart enough fighter to earn his points. And to his credit, though, I thought in this fight, that Machida didn't take the third round off, even though he knew he was ahead. And I thought he was pretty aggressive in the third round, as opposed to what I've seen in the past.
Yeah,
I'd like to see Nakamura again. I'd like to see Nakamura, you know, try to cut to 185.
Yeah.
And fight middleweight.
I would too.
I think that's
The thing with Kushida, and, you know, there's something to be said for being technical. I don't know if you saw his fight against David Heath.
Yeah.
But he, you know, in that fight, didn't seem to do much there either, but it was kind of fun to watch just because of his game plan. You know, Heath was completely frustrated the whole time.
Yep.
Couldn't do anything. Whereas in this fight, he actually took it to Nakamura. I think probably, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody said something to him. Like, hey, you need to kind of pick up the pace here a little bit.
Well, I think
you're going to be on the main card.
I think he suggested to him that this guy can't hurt you.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked like halfway through the fight that Nakamura really had nothing for Machida that was going to hurt him.
Yeah.
Or change the pace of the fight.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a big factor in the fight as well, was that he was, I mean, Machida was never in danger.
No.
You know, and for all the fights that I've watched of him, I think he was probably the most aggressive in this one, at least the most outwardly aggressive without having his opponent in trouble.
Right.
You know, he was still pushing the pace.
Right.
Even though he wasn't really ever all that close to finishing the fight.
No. Not at all.
I want to see him in there. And again, I don't know how this will happen, but I want to see him in there. I'd like to see him in there with a guy like Tito Ortiz. That's a really intriguing fight to me.
Yeah.
Because those two, if you want to talk about polar opposite fighting styles,
yep.
You know, I'd love to see that.
I think Machida needs a name fighter to fight against next.
Yeah, like because we know, I mean, we...
Top-tier fighter, top five sort
yeah.
of guy, top six sort of guy. Maybe someone coming off a loss, I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, because we know that he beat Stephen Bonner, and that was a while ago. We know he beat Rich Franklin when Franklin was still at 205.
Yep.
You know, we know he beat BJ Penn, who was a blown-up lightweight, you know, fighting at 205. But we don't really know... I mean, we don't really know what he can really do.
We don't know what he can really do against somebody that's going to push him.
That's what I mean.
Him. I mean,
that's what I mean.
Funny, we haven't mentioned, I'm trying to think of who we didn't mention there. Actually, I was going to try to, I was going to mention Babalu. I'm wondering if...
I thought the same thing.
I'm wondering if as time goes by, that they don't drag him back in.
It wouldn't surprise me if they brought him back, if he repents, you know, and
what a goof.
It wouldn't surprise me if they brought him back in, but and that would be another interesting fight, you know, Bobby was about it.
I'm tired of Machida against B C level guys.
Yeah,
I mean it's time to make a move at the title or he isn't.
Yeah. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what they do with him because it's certainly something that he's a guy that they can make some interesting matchups with if they choose to, but that's
right.
The question is whether they will choose to. I think
I don't see why they wouldn't, because I think I don't know very many people. I know some, I guess, that want to see him fight.
Yeah,
it's more like you were saying, you want to see him fight against Ortiz. You know,
yeah.
I want to see him fight against a name guy. I want to see him fight against somebody that will make him fight more aggressively.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's essentially our light heavyweight picture. I'm trying to think of the prelims top of my head. Let's see if we had any. I think that was all for the 205 division, those three fights. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
So let's switch gears now and look at the fight between John Fitch and Diego Sanchez. Now, if I remember correctly, you had Sanchez winning this one. Is that right?
No, that was Tavares.
I
had Tavares winning the first fight of the evening, and
yeah.
I still had him winning the first fight of the evening. By the way,
yeah.
I've been on the Fitch bandwagon for some time. Although I will say that I thought Sanchez looked very good.
Oh yeah.
And had he fought with that sort of intensity against Koscheck, he probably would have won.
It would have been a lot more interesting of a fight.
Been closer.
Yeah.
But I thought Sanchez fought with a lot of intensity. I thought Fitch just took the fight wherever Diego wanted to go and won the fight wherever it went.
That was the most interesting aspect of the fight to me, was that, you know, Fitch was fine with letting him take it to the ground. You know, Fitch looked like he preferred to stand up,
yep.
but Diego kept shooting in. So after a while, he said, "You know what? Fine, let's go to the ground," and
right.
he beat him there.
Yep. And I was very impressed with Fitch because he made it look. I don't say he made it look easy, but he just looked like he was in control the whole way. I mean, to me,
yeah.
watching the fight, I've watched it a couple times after reading some of our reader comments. I still have it, you know, 30-27 Fitch. I didn't see. I don't know what you know. Marco Rosales is watching.
Yeah, that guy was high all night long.
I'm not sure which round Sanchez won, much less two
yeah.
of them.
Yeah.
And in fact, I mean, watching the fight again, I couldn't see a round that I could arguably give to Sanchez, or even really necessarily score a draw.
Yeah.
Because when we get to the controversy about you know the scoring system, I think one of the problems with the scoring system is that judges feel like they have to score a fight 10-9 and that's it. Or score around 10-9, and that's it. And to me, if you're gonna be on a 10-point must system, that's okay. But there are rounds where, if you watch the round end and you really don't know who won the round, and you're thinking about, geez, I could go either way with this. Well, that's a 10-10 round.
Yeah, there's an argument to be made for that, but I think there's always something that you can look at that distinguishes one guy from the other to say that they won the round. Now.
I'm not so sure. In MMA, Sean, I'm not so sure. I think there's rounds that go back and forth, and both guys, and when you can't, if you have to really look into the fine details to give some guy a whole point more than another, to me that's a 10-10 round. And
well,
type of that, when somebody really dominates another guy, you should see more 10-8, 10-7 rounds.
See, I don't know, because that's why I think the 10-point must system is no good. And, you know, I've talked about it before, but if you get a 3-round fight, you know, I have a hard time giving a draw round or a 10-8 round, really, you know, because for the good of the sport, that is, you know, because the last thing anyone wants to see is a draw.
And,
you know, we saw what happened with Ortiz and Evans, and that was just because of a point being taken away.
I understand.
You know, so from a PR aspect, from a marketing aspect, and I know that shouldn't have anything to do with the competition, and I still don't think it does. You know, I think you can always pick a winner of a round. And that's why, you know, a split decision isn't necessarily a bad thing. You know, a split decision doesn't necessarily mean that a guy got robbed. But, you know, that's why they have three judges.
It's a split decision. A split decision, split decisions should be reserved for fights that you don't know who won. Like, generally when you watch a fight, at the end of the fight, if it goes to the cards, you know who won the fight.
Yeah.
Opinion. And to me, it's been surprising over the last 3, 4, 5 cards how many fights have been judged the other way.
Well, those have just been bad decisions.
All right, well, this is the top. We're not talking about barn shows. We're not talking about.
Oh, I agree.
Minor shows. This is the top promotion in the world right now for this particular sport. And therefore, you should have judging that is appropriate to declare who won the fight and have it
oh, yeah.
more or less in line with what everybody saw.
Yeah, I'm with you there, but I'm talking about within the confines of the 10-point must system. A split decision sometimes is going to happen, you know, even if the judging is sound, because you can say I scored the round for this guy, but I can see if you went the other way, you know, and that's why they have an odd amount of judges. Same reason they have odd amount of rounds. Now, if we're looking at a scoring system, you know, like I've said before, like we both said, the 10-point must system is no good. It's too I don't know, it's too one-dimensional, you know. How do you say, with so many different aspects to a fight, how do you say, okay, well, that guy won? You know, I mean, yeah, we can say it in our heads, but how do you judge that officially?
Well, because it's the same way, it's the same way you would do it with any sort of sport that, you know, requires judging per se, whether it's figure skating, synchronized swimming, or boxing, or MMA, is that there are elements to every fight, all right? And MMA has more of those elements than most. But still, as you build up those elements to dominate your opponent, that's what makes you win a round. And
yeah.
Sometimes, neither fighter has an advantage. And to me, that's a 10-10 round. And I don't see a problem with that because as often as I'm going to give a 10-10 round, if I get a guy that is clearly won a round, to me, clearly winning a round, like not just sort of winning a round, but like clearly winning the round, is a 10-8 round. or just dominating the hell out of a guy who manages to make it to the end of the bell and just sustain major damage is a 10-7 round. But what it does is if you're going to educate judges to judge rounds more than just every round is 10-9, you're going to give the fighter a chance who might have lost two rounds to at least make a comeback.
Yeah, but who's going to come back and have a 10-8 round after losing two rounds?
I think we've seen a lot of fights that, you know, you've watched a round and, okay, well, he got outstruck a little bit, so 10-9 him. And it happens again in the second round, and then that guy's down 2 points.
Yeah.
So essentially, he's got to stop the other guy, because even if he wins the third round, he ain't going to win.
Yeah. And, you know, to me, and I go back and forth on this, but I think there's something to be said also for scoring the fight as a whole instead of round by round, because, you know, it's like you say, if you've got a guy that's down two to nothing going into the third, and he dominates the round but doesn't quite get a 10-8 round, you know, I don't know. It's
would you call that a draw then? To me, that's a whole other string of problems. If you're just
exactly.
saying, okay, well, I'm going to judge this fight based on what I've seen cumulatively, I think that you, especially over the course of a long, not even the three-round fights, but like the championship fights, by the time you get down to the fifth round, you've watched 25 minutes of fighting, and the first round was a long time ago.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think
that's
tough. I'm not sure there is a good answer. I don't think there is a good answer, Sean. I think the 10-point must system is going to stay. I don't think you're going to get away from that, truthfully.
Yeah.
Because there's only
I agree.
Judges. But I think judges need to be re-educated on how to score an MMA fight as opposed to a boxing match. Right now, we got too many. The judges aren't judging from the same scorecard.
That's the problem.
And you're seeing
there is the problem.
And what you're seeing is these goofy ass decisions. I don't see. You referenced the Tavares Griffin fight. I don't see how Tavares loses the decision in the first fight. Then the very next fight, you got Sanchez, who actually wins on one card, and I thought it made no sense to me.
Yeah.
The judging, it made no sense to me. When Jardines and Liddell went to the cards, I'll tell you right now, I had no idea who was going to win. I knew who should win.
Yeah.
After that night,
you're absolutely right.
And when they announced the split decision, I thought Liddell just stole this fight.
Yeah, I thought so too.
When they announced one judge for Liddell and one for Jardine, I was sure, I would have bet on it had I had the opportunity, that Liddell would have won the fight by split decision, just based on the judging I had seen earlier in the evening.
Yeah. And ironically, Cecil Peoples, who has been awful at times, got it right on that night, and it was Marcos Rosales who was just awful. And you know, here's the thing, and you said it before: these guys have to judge on the same criteria, and they have to know what the criteria are. And I know they're in there in the bylines of the Athletic Commission, you know, rules or whatever. But it means nothing, because if you've got a guy, now let's look back at Hamel Bisping.
Here we go.
Where Bisping won that decision. what I heard was, and I heard this from, I think it was Jordan Breen on Sure Dog, saying that Cecil Peoples and Jeff Mullen, who both scored it for Bisping, come from a point fighting background, from karate.
Right.
Well, what are they judging a karate fight?
Right.
You know, what difference does it make what background you come from? You know, your background should be moot, because you're judging an MMA fight, and you should have the criteria and the guidelines laid out so that you can judge the fight the same as everybody else is.
Right. Right.
You know, that's the whole problem.
But anytime you get into subjectivity, like judging, though, the background's going to, you know, they're probably not going to score them the same. A karate judge is not going to score it the same as some guy who's been judging high school, college wrestling for 20 years.
Yeah.
Or boxing. I mean, you know, and I would imagine most of the judges they get are boxing judges. Well, boxing ain't MMA.
Yeah, and you're right. And so the next question is, why do we have these guys judging MMA fights?
Because they don't have anybody else, I'd imagine.
Yeah, there's got to be somebody.
Because the State Athletic Commission probably has so many judges. I mean, I would imagine to be a judge, you've got to be sanctioned by the Athletic Commission to be a judge, right?
Yeah, sure.
So
you
there's
do,
only
but...
so many people that probably... I mean, have the criteria to be judges. I mean,
yeah, but to me, the UFC, the UFC should be able to find guys who are qualified to judge MMA matches, who don't have connections to fighters, who don't have connections to camps,
right,
that they can bring in. They've got Mark Ratner on the board from the NSAC originally, and they can say, here's these guys. We want these guys judging our MMA fights.
Right.
You know, get 5, 6, 7 guys, and they can be your MMA judges. You know, Cecil Peoples is at every freaking event, and there's no reason he should be.
Right.
Because he's turned in some boners for decisions, man. Just awful ones,
well,
you know.
We'll send our resumes in.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's enough guys. There's got to be enough guys that can judge an MMA fight impartially and well, to where we shouldn't be having to talk about this, how Diego Sanchez won that fight on anybody's card.
Every card. Diego Sanchez didn't win a single round, as far as I'm concerned.
No, I had a 30-27 Fitch.
I had a 37-27 Fitch.
Yeah.
I mean, he fought well, but he didn't do enough to win any round, and therefore, to me, he didn't. Diego said after the fight he didn't win the fight.
Yeah. He knew he didn't win
Diego
the fight.
Sanchez, who I'm sure considers himself to be the right hand of God, said, I didn't win the fight. Well, for crying out loud, Marco Rosales says you did.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? I mean, and he fought. I'm not taking it, you know, and we're kind of getting away from the fight itself. Sanchez fought.
Oh, yeah, the fight was great.
Sanchez fought very well. I'm not taking anything away from Diego. He doesn't. To me, he didn't lose anything. But
no.
To me, Fitch, I want to see Fitch fight for the title. And it's a shame
to
get a title fight until December.
Yeah.
And then we got to wait for GSP to get his rematch in March or April. And
yep.
I mean, I've read a lot of places where people want to see Fitch GSP.
I wouldn't mind seeing Fitch GSP. I'd like, you know.
And then the winner gets the title shot.
It's the quandary. What do you do?
And then what do you do? What do you do with Carl?
Exactly. I was just going to say, I'd love to see Fitch and Carl.
Yeah. But I think, you know, Fitch has fought enough guys and won enough in a row that it is his turn for a title shot.
But you got to say something for the former champ, too.
Oh, yes. I'm not taking anything away from GSP. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. Because the problem, you know, honestly, the problem, Sean, the problem is you have the stupid TV show dictating shot.
I agree. I agree absolutely 100%.
TV show. I mean, it is. The first episode was one of the worst episodes of TV I've ever seen. Awful TV. You know, I'm not a fan of reality TV anyway, which is probably besides the point. But it's awful. I mean, you know, I don't know what Mac Danzig's doing on that show. I don't understand. You can't script conflict. You can't script drama. You know, it's just pointless. But because of that show, instead of getting the title fight, probably should have the title fight at this card.
That's the exact thing.
Hugh Cerra probably should have been yesterday or Saturday.
Well, the Silva Franklin should have been Saturday, and then Hugh Cerra should have been the next one.
Fine, October. Then at least get GSP in January in Montreal.
Exactly.
The title, which would be an absolute zoo.
Yeah.
And then
can you imagine?
And then you could put Fitch in the title picture in April.
Yeah.
And then work Carl in there again somewhere to win another fight to be the get a shot in July.
Yeah.
Or August. You know what I mean? But now, what if Sarah wins? What if Sarah beats Hughes? Then what?
He might.
Listen, I wouldn't pick against him right now.
No.
I wouldn't pick it. Hughes is another one of these one-trick ponies that are going out of style in MMA. You know, Liddell's star has fallen. Part of it is age. Part of it is he's a one-trick pony, a very good one-trick pony, to be sure, like I said. But he's a striker. He's a one-handed striker. And
I think he's a
monster grappler. Well, the days of the one-horse show are leaving us.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Liddell, him in particular anyway, is that he's got other skills. And, you know, obviously he's got takedown defense like a mother, but, you know, we have no idea what he can do on the ground. Maybe he's great, but he chooses not to go to the ground. You know, had he chosen to do that, maybe he would have been able to take out Jardine. Who knows? But Jardine's actually pretty good on the ground, too.
Like you said, he hasn't gone to the ground in years.
What
makes you think he'd be any good on the ground? I mean, you know, he said in a couple of his pre-fight interviews, yeah, I'm pretty good on the ground, too. Against who? Where have you shown this? No, but it's a fair question, Sean. I mean, I don't mean
I know it is. Yeah.
Fantastic.
I agree.
It's a fair question. Who have
I agree.
Your skills against on the ground? You know, it's one thing to roll in training, It's another thing to show it in the cage.
Yep.
I'm not sure he'd won the fight on the ground against Jardine either. In fact,
no, I'm not either.
He probably would have won the fight more on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, Jardine's got good jiu-jitsu that he doesn't show all that often, right, but it is pretty good.
Going back to the welterweights, Hughes ain't going to beat anybody in striking. Or very
no.
You know, if Hughes is going to try to stand and strike with Sarah, he's going to lose.
Yeah.
He's going to lose.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, Sarah's got darn good jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And even worse, Sarah thinks he can win.
Yeah.
You know, Sarah thinks he can win. And to me, I don't see why he can't.
Well, you know, the other thing is Hughes is looking past him.
And Hughes is looking past him.
I would bet you that Hughes is looking past him.
Hughes is looking straight at a rematch with GSP. And
and
like I said, I mean, you know, the odds would say that he's going to lose again to GSP.
Yeah.
You know, because GSP is not a one-trick pony.
No, I pick GSP against the world.
He proved against Charlie. I think the GSP fight against Koscheck was a statement to Hughes that I can beat you on the ground, too.
Yeah.
I can
absolutely
too. I mean, I thought that was a statement. I'm sure that if GSP wanted to keep that standing and pick apart Josh Koscheck, I think he probably could have.
Yeah.
The fact that he was willing to go to ground with Koscheck, I think, was a statement directly at Hughes, right, saying, I can take you on the ground.
Or even at Sarah.
Yeah. Or even
because I bet he could take Sarah on the ground too.
Right. I think in the grand scheme of things, the welterweight division, like I say, I'm kind of pissed about the whole TV show thing.
Yeah.
You know, but.
You can almost sympathize with the UFC's position because they're not catering to us. You know, we're saying, hey, give us our welterweight title fight. It's time for that. Our timeline's getting all screwed up with contenders. They're saying, wait a second, our cash cow here, the Ultimate Fighter, that's got to come first. I know.
Yeah,
it's
five weight classes, right? Yeah, five weight classes.
Yeah.
Well, cash cow, I see the same amount of ads on pretty much every UFC show I watch. So
you're not kidding.
Anytime they put programming on, I'm sure it's a cash cow.
Well, it's also how they build their stars.
Yeah, they have in the past.
Yeah.
In the past, certainly. But like I say, those stars are becoming legitimate main show stars now. It's good to have a
yeah.
system, I understand that. But, you know, there's five weight classes. And if they do 10 pay-per-views a year, that means you should see a title fight every pay-per-view.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think there's no reason that they shouldn't have had a title fight on this last card.
Yeah. Well, there is. The Ultimate Fighter.
Well, yeah. Right. No reason that I like.
Yeah. But I think, getting back to the original point here, I think the days of the one-skilled fighter, dominant-skilled fighter, are drawing to a close. And that's why... You know, I think when Sarah beats Hughes, I'd be interesting to see what road Matt has to travel to get back into the mix.
Yeah,
I mean,
he may retire.
It'd be moot if Hughes wins, I suppose, but I don't think he's like I said, I can't see him beating GSP. So eventually, you know, I don't think you're going to see Hughes be the welterweight champion too far into 08, even if he beats Sarah.
No.
So. And I think it's going to be a long road back for him just because there's so many contenders that are waiting to break into that mix.
Yeah, so welterweight, I mean, we talk about how messed up a lot of the stuff is in MMA, but what a great division, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's funny because, you have kind of the opposite picture in the welterweights as you do the light heavies, where you had, you know, two dominant / legendary fighters go down to Ultimate Fighters in the light heavyweight division in the welterweight.
Yeah.
The last two big-time Ultimate Fighters in Koscheck and Sanchez losing to, dominant, already in the stable. So it's kind of an interesting little mirrored proposition. I mean, both guys are pretty young, so, I mean, Sanchez and Koscheck will make their bones there eventually. But
oh, yeah, Sanchez, I would say Sanchez is going to be a champion within 4 years or so.
Eventually.
I think so, because he's smart enough to know what he has to work on. You know, he came out of that fight and said, you know, either I got to put on some more bulk and be, a real true 170-pounder, or I'm going to drop down to 55.
Right.
And that's a smart guy. You know, he's saying I got to be able to have the strength to hang with these guys, or I got to take what I got and take it to another ballpark.
Yep. Yeah. He got outmuscled by Fitch.
Yeah, he did.
Fitch dominated him in a very subtle way.
Yeah.
That. he let Sanchez almost dictate where the fight took place. Almost
and
really
then beat
let
him.
And he really let him dictate the pace.
Yeah,
more or less.
He did.
And Fitch just, when we got to that position, Fitch took over control until it went somewhere else, and then Fitch dominated there. And
yeah,
you know, I mean, it was an interesting little fight to watch. I mean, it was one of the more.
It was. I had a lot of fun with it.
Fights.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with it.
To watch.
Because yeah, you know, the statement by Fitch was, "I'll go anywhere you want to go, and I'll beat you there."
Right. It was
and
very,
that's what he did.
It was very St. Pierre-esque.
Absolutely.
It really was.
Yeah.
You can't beat me anywhere, so I don't care where I go.
And can you imagine, boy? I'll tell you what, Fitch GSP, that would be a heck of a fight.
I'd like to see that with. That's what I'd like to see for the strap.
Yeah.
I don't want to see. I really don't want to have that fight wasted on an undercard. Or, you know,
not undercard, but
not the main event.
Yeah.
That's a main event championship fight.
Yeah.
Because right now, I would say your top two. Right now, to me, they're the top two welterweights.
It's pretty doggone close if it's not. If they're not. I mean, you have to. You kind of have to put Sarah at the top right now just because of circumstances. As far as official rankings. If you're talking about best fighters, then yeah, right. GSP Fitch, I think, are at the top.
Right,
but if you're talking about, like, official rankings,
once again, referencing the Torch Nation rankings on the message board.
Join us. Yeah. So, yeah, there's the welterweight division. Let's move on to the first fight of the night, going backwards again. And you and I differ on this one. It's Griffin and Tavares. Give me your position here. Convince me. Of course, I haven't watched the fight again, which I need to. But
yes, you should. This is one of those fights that, if I'm not mistaken, this was a unanimous decision for Griffin, right?
I believe so. Yes.
Okay. This was a good fight. This was a good, close, back and forth fight. It really, really was. I enjoyed watching this fight again and again and again. Unlike a lot of them that I kind of plod through. But this is a fun fight to watch again. I was very impressed with Tavares.
Yeah.
I thought
he's a real deal.
Very aggressive fight, very slippery fighter, clever fighter, tactical fighter, showed a multitude of skills. And Griffin didn't disappoint at all. Tyson Griffin is the real deal also. Who equally fought a good tactical fight. I thought Tavares had the upper hand more frequently, especially in the latter half of the fight, to earn at least a split decision. I had him win the fight. I had him win the fight because I had him win in rounds 2 and 3. I had the first round. When I first watched it, I had the first round a draw. Watching it again, I could conceivably give it to Griffin. But even so, I thought that Tavares had the second and third rounds. I thought it was a closer fight than the judges indicated. I was surprised that out of the cards, I think it was 30-27, 30-27, 29-28 or something like that.
It was 2-29-28 and then 30-27.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, I was surprised by that because I thought that Tavares would have gotten at least one judge, in a 2-1 fashion.
Right.
Having said that, I don't think either guy lost anything on it. I thought it was a good
close. No.
It was a close enough fight that you know, both guys are going to get more fights. Both guys show that they can bang. Both guys will be in the hunt. Both guys throw their name into the lightweight mix along with what seems like a million other people right now. So on the whole of it, I don't think anybody lost anything.
Yeah.
But again, I'm not sure how you score that fight. 3 rounds for Griffin.
I did have the second round going to Tavares.
That's my take. Like I said, it goes back into the judging thing again, which we've already beat to death. I thought, and I've read, it seems like the more you read, everybody's got their own opinion. I see a lot of opinions that had Tavares win in 29-28. It is what it is.
Yeah, it is because, you know, and I said it, I even said in my first that I gave it a razor-thin decision to Griffin, but then that third was probably the closest of the three. But, boy, that was a great fight.
Yeah. See, but, like, and I guess when you go back to the 10-point system, I'd like to see there be a provision for, let's say after three rounds of the draw, then have a sudden victory round.
See, I would love that.
Have a three minute sudden victory round.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If it's a draw, and
yeah,
and you know, make an effort at breaking the tie, because I think
yeah.
You could have conceivably called that a draw.
You could have conceivably called it a draw.
You know, I mean, and you know, you could have, but you know, so bring in the sudden victory concept. You know, look, you know, let them go three more rounds and see who wants it.
Yeah.
Because by that point. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you're fine.
I was going to say, by that point, you know, because it's interesting because you can listen to the crowd, too, because the crowd knows who won.
Yeah.
And I noticed that the crowd was kind of up in the air on that one, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, like when Liddell raised his hands after the fight was over in the Liddell fight and the crowd booed, you know who
Yeah, they were having none of it.
Yeah, they knew who won. You know, they knew who the crowd thought won. And usually the crowd is right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if multiple thousands of people have the same idea, they're probably right.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, and with this one, you know, it brings into question, again, the criteria. What counts more? Does it count more that you locked in a submission attempt? Or does it count more that you escaped from it? Does it count more that you almost end the fight but not really, and then the guy spins out and takes your back? You know, or does it matter, does the guy that takes the back get the credit there? Does it matter if you get a takedown? Does it matter if you stand right back up? You know, how do you score that? And I don't think they really know how to score it. Like, I'll give you an example. One of the sequences I really enjoyed was when Tavares, you know, Tavares is backed up against the cage, Griffin throws a shoulder strike, and then Tavares rides that momentum down to the canvas and gets an omoplata attempt. Then Griffin spins out of the omoplata, which was fantastic, and then took Tavares' back. Who won that?
Right. See, I don't think anybody does. That's just it,
yeah.
Though. I don't see, because in those situations, I think that you can't be afraid to say they split.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As opposed to, the first time I watched it, what really pissed me off the most was that Tavares didn't win on anybody's card. Out of three judges, nobody had him winning, especially knowing
right.
the crap decisions we've seen lately. And that's what kind of prompted a lot of my comments. However, in retrospect, again, it was a close enough fight that either guy could have won the fight.
Yeah.
Could have won the fight. Okay?
Yeah.
What torques me the most is judges that are way off and affect the decision.
Yeah.
Like the Fitch Sanchez fight should have been, I mean, it was 3-0 Fitch. Period.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't there's no debate on this to me. I mean, you know, that's what I'm talking about. Like, the sequence you talked about, no, there you can't really take, you know, I don't think one guy wins the sequence.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, over the course of a round, like you said, you can qualify a guy winning a round. Because if you don't, you can't award a one-point victory to anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's my issue. And, you know, like I say, the close fights, the ones that are really tight, the one where, you know, the fight ends after 15 minutes and you're sitting there going, geez, you know, I wonder who actually won the decision. Those were the fights that that's not what these fights are about.
Yeah.
These fights are about Hamel Bisping. These fights are about, you know, to an extent, the Tavares fight. These fights are about the goofy decision, Rosales.
Ortiz-Griffin.
Ortiz-Griffin.
Yeah.
You know, you can go on and on and on and on and on and on. Like I said, had Liddell won the fight last night,
seriously.
If Liddell had won the fight last night,
we'd still be talking about it.
Decision. The only thing we would have talked about, the only thing anybody would be talking about, was the lousy decision. They won't be talking about Shogun losing. They wouldn't have been talking about the fight itself. They'd have been talking about the judging. You don't want people talking.
And right, exactly, and rightfully so. I might add.
Right. So I mean, that's the. So I don't know how you fix that with the judges per se.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think that. You know, I think there's a number of people who watch a lot of fights who could probably judge a fight accurately.
Right.
At ringside. Why they can't get these people to do it that they're paying to be there is beyond me.
That's my point. You know, there's enough guys that could judge a fight well that aren't, you know, the UFC has enough pull, enough power, enough scouts to friggin' find some people that can judge a fight.
Right.
You know.
Accurately. Like,
exactly.
It's not rocket science. I mean,
no. And really, let me say this. The 10-point must system, go ahead.
I was going to say, the fights that are really, really close aren't the ones we're arguing about.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
They aren't the ones that people are, you know, bitching and moaning about. The ones
exactly.
The ones that they're complaining about are the ones that were just lousy decisions.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not like this, you know, Griffin-Tavares, because I would have been okay if that went to Tavares.
Right.
I had a 29-28 Griffin, but it was thin. So I said, hey, you know, okay. You know, but it's fights like we mentioned before, all those ones. And, you know, even Griffin-Guida I thought was kind of a robbery for Griffin, you know.
Yeah.
But even then I could see it going, you know, I'm kind of okay with it. But, yeah, you're right. It's these ones where you're wondering what is going on in these guys' heads, you know, what's happening there. Now, I think a real easy solution to the real close fights is what we just mentioned, is having a one more round,
yeah.
Seeing who wins that. You know, a lot of people talk about how these fights between contenders should be five rounds. I don't think that's the answer. You know, yeah, maybe you could get, you know, more of an indicator of who should win the fight after five rounds. But, you know, as far as furthering the sport goes, less is more, you know.
I agree.
You can't have five-round fights every time and then have each one go to decision. You get three fights on a card that you paid $50 for, you know.
Right. No,
you can't do that.
Three rounds is right. And like I said, you can't be afraid to have, either you got to accept having draws, like Shuto or something, maybe not that bad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you got to accept having draws, or you got to be able to take it when you have a crap decision.
Yeah.
Or you got to put in an extra round, and if it's close in the fourth round, then it's a draw.
Yeah, and let's look at it this way: is there a more exciting time in football than overtime in a big game?
No, absolutely not.
Or baseball in the World Series where it goes into extra innings?
Right.
You know. I mean, that would be thrilling if you get a fight that goes to a draw like Griffin Tavares, and these two guys both want it real bad, both up and coming fighters, and they get this one last round to prove that they win the fight. I mean, come on.
I think you'd you know, the drawback might be that you have two guys going, you know, screw this, we're just going to dance for 5 minutes or 3 minutes.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
But then again, you know, if one guy does, you know, you only need one guy to show aggression to win the fight.
Exactly.
So I think it's intrinsic that somebody would try to win the fight.
Yep.
You know, I agree. The some of the decisions down the stretch here in 07 have been just inexplicable, and it's time to change that one way or the other. So I'm looking forward to some either changes or just more consistency in 08. And having the same judges there over and over again making the same goofy decisions is not fixing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, to qualify all this, it's not a huge, huge problem in MMA because, not, you know, the percentage-wise, not a whole lot of the fights go to decision and end in a bad decision. But the fact that we're spending so much time talking about it,
right?
You know,
all you need is one. All you need
exactly.
is a championship fight to go
that's
the wrong way.
Exactly it.
Decision.
That's exactly it. Imagine if that fight had gone to Henderson instead of Rampage.
Right. And the, you know... There are those that, you know, it only takes one cut, one point the other way.
Yeah.
You know, you only need one point to go the other way. So, I mean, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, it's just not that impossible. You know, 48-47 one way, 48-47 the other way. Yeah.
Very true.
Championship changes hands. Big mess.
Very true.
Big mess. Anyway.
So, yeah. Well, we've beaten that horse to death enough.
Yeah, it was a good card overall. I mean,
for
a card with no championship fights on it, it was a good card.
Yeah, with no championship fights and with only one that didn't go the distance. Real, you know,
yeah.
I thought that was real telling about the caliber of fighters on the card is that, you know, only one fight didn't go the distance, and that one might as well have. And it was still a really enjoyable card.
They paced it pretty well. I mean, all things considered, they had five. You know, and it, you know, it's funny how we talk about this. We had five fights that essentially all went 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You did 75 minutes of fighting on your pay-per-view. When how many times have we had, you know, the barely squeezing six fights and, like, none of them went to decision?
Yeah, you know?
So, you know, they can do it.
Exactly. This is what I'm saying.
It was
is that
nice,
possible
it was nice,
to do,
yeah, it was,
so
it was
friggin'
nice
do it.
Yeah, it was nice to watch a pay-per-view full of fighting.
Yeah. And, you know, after watching a card like that, I have no problem getting the prelims off of UFC On Demand.
Right.
I have no problem with that.
Right. Right. I mean, if they would download better, they wouldn't. You know, that's the internet there.
And by the way, well, speaking of prelims, not to get off topic here, but the Matt Wyman and Omigawa fight, that was a pretty good fight.
Have not seen it yet. That's like it's been downloading the whole 3 hours we've been on the air. I think.
Yeah. FYI, when you're done downloading, that it's a pretty good fight.
I'll check that one out.
Yeah. I haven't gotten to see all of them yet. And I'll tell you what, though, a lot of the prelims from Fight Night 11 were pretty good, too. That was
a pretty good
event.
Yeah, it was.
Pretty good event. And speaking of Fight Night 11, also off topic, but whatever, is there a weirder guy around than Crocota or Crocata, whatever his name is?
No,
the guy that fought Kumo?
Yeah, no, there isn't.
Wow, that dude.
No, yeah, the short answer is no.
Yeah, if for those that are listening, if you've got $2, drop it on that Kumo and Crocota fight. Kumo, well, I won't tell you.
Yeah.
I basically already told you who won the fight. But anyway, it's an interesting fight to watch, and Crocota is just an odd duck, man. I don't know if he comes back or not, but he's a weird dude. He's 0-2 in the UFC right now. But
entertainment value-wise, he's worth it.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Kumo, too. Kumo's a weird guy, too, but at least, you know, I don't know.
He looks normal for a fighter.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not out of character for someone who makes his living beating people up.
Very true, I guess.
You know what I mean?
And Kumo, I'll tell you what, Kumo's good. He's making a little bit of noise.
Yes, he is.
A couple of knockouts in a row. Josh Haynes knocked out Josh Haynes, who, you know, couldn't get knocked out by what's his name? Rory Singer. Went through rounds, Singer couldn't get knocked out, and Kumo dropped him.
Yep.
That was a
Kumo's a dangerous
fighter. Right hand and dropped Crocota, too. So there it is. I gave it away.
Kumo is a dangerous little fighter. I think he's one of these guys that – I think he's going to be one of the dark horse guys that rises up the division over the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah.
I think you'll see him rack up a couple more wins. He'll sneak onto the main card somewhere.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he'll be in the mix.
And that's the thing – this is the thing I really like about The Ultimate Fighter, is that you get to know these guys on the show and you get to see a guy – and Forrest Griffin, too. You know, everybody loved Forrest Griffin before he even won a friggin' fight,
right.
You know? And now that we're seeing him...
Nobody thought he was that good.
Exactly. And now we're seeing him taking out Shogun.
Right. Nobody thought... I don't think anybody ever thought, especially after he got knocked out by Jardine, Forrest actually ever be in title contention.
Yeah.
He'd always kind of be around, be good for a fight.
Yeah.
You know, throw him in there somewhere on the mid-card, bang around. Nobody figured Forrest to be a contender.
No, he was in nobody's top 10.
Right, nobody's top 10.
I guarantee he's there now.
He's now.
But that's the fun thing about this. You know, you got guys like that. You got guys like Marcus Davis, you know.
Yeah.
Guys like Kumo, guys like Stevenson, you know, who are a lot of fun to watch. And then all of a sudden, here they are moving their way up the ladder. I think Kumo, you know, Kumo's a young guy, too. He's he is someone that could come out of nowhere. Talk about guys that could come out of nowhere. Kumo, no one expects anything out of that guy.
No.
You know.
No. No, he's
but he could certainly come out of nowhere and make some noise.
Absolutely, he could. You'll see him. We'll see him again. We'll see him again in a couple shows from now. And,
sure.
I tell you, he's not dull.
No.
Not dull. I mean, he gets in there and something's going to happen one way or the other.
Absolutely.
He looks like something's going to happen. I mean, looks like a felony's going to be committed or something. He's something to watch.
Yeah. Well, I think that just about wraps things up. We're going through, we got a bit of a drought as far as UFC content goes, but we've got more MMA coming up. We got the Strikeforce card coming up this next week. You know, and we also had the Cage Rage card that went down over the weekend. I think Vitor Belfort picked up a win there. I haven't been able to check that one out yet, but it did happen. So,
it's interesting how the UFC noise is just kind of drowning everything else out right now.
It is.
You know, I it's louder and louder and louder and louder and louder.
Yeah, and deservedly so. You know, that's where everything's happening.
It is.
Although Pro Lee, I'll tell you what, you know, they bought out the Hawaiian promotion, Icon, bought up King of the Cage, bought up Cage Rage, Gladiator Challenge, all that stuff. That's all Pro Elite, which is good for them, you know.
It is. It doesn't hurt to have other promotions making some noise and making their product visible.
Yeah, and I do like that it's all under one banner. I think there's something to be said for having fighter interchange between all those little promotions. You know, they can have their own little mini dream fights. I mean, you know, nothing that's huge, but you can have Robbie Lawler and Merle Hua, you know?
Nothing wrong with that fight. That's
no.
Legitimate.
Good fight.
That's a legitimate, I'll pay for that fight.
Yeah, and that was one that...
There's a lot of matchups out there that are like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Good fun fights to watch.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a good time. It's a good time, like I said, when you have chaos in the main promotion, it makes it a little tougher on in the littler promotions. But it's also a time to, you know, kind of reinforce your own banner and
yep.
Make a push.
Yep. You know, I almost wonder, if the right strategy is to have all your events during the time where the UFC is running three events in 6 weeks, or is it better to have your events during the four-week period now where we're going to have nothing from the UFC except the Ultimate Fighter?
I would lean the other way. I would lean towards the dead periods, largely
yeah.
because right now MMA fans are talking MMA.
Yeah.
Okay, and so if you know there's another event coming up in a week or 10 days, that sort of feeds the need.
Yeah.
You know, I think I would try to schedule my events right after UFC events, specifically
yeah.
because the interest is there.
Yeah, and to speak to that, I probably would have seen the Cage Rage event had there not been a UFC this weekend.
Exactly. Because if you're a smaller promotion, you know, the MMA community is supporting you.
Yeah.
So I think that the peak is, like I say, these days after a big event, is the time to have your event hyped for, hey, we got something coming up in 5 days. Good for us.
Yep.
Watch our card.
Yep. Yeah. Well, on that note, let's go ahead and wrap things up. Do you have any parting shots?
For those of you who occasionally read my previews and blogs, I apologize for throwing out a bunch of stinkers again. So the correct strategy, if you ever reading my columns, is to pick directly against me, because you probably end up with a winning record. So my apologies out there. The message board is somewhat active, but we need your help. Please keep in mind that, we try to have as much of an interactive experience as possible with fans from all over, and your thoughts are certainly welcome. It doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter really where you're coming from. We appreciate your opinions. This is not to be confused with other forums on the internet, such as, perhaps Sherdog, where, you get blown off the forum if you have an opinion. Come on the message board. Let's hear what you have to say. We do have an open ranking system. We'd like to hear your thoughts. We're looking for the top five fighters in each UFC division, and we're going to compile it and post it on the main page for Torch Nation. Come join us.
Yeah, I'll second all that. And you got to be impressed that I went the whole podcast without mentioning that your new number one contender is yours truly for the picks.
Good luck to you. It's been a while since a staff member holding the belt here, I think.
The Jardine picks worked for me in that way. But yeah, I'll second what Jerry said. Personally, I like to get on the forums a lot more than I have been lately. I do go through periods where my job tries to monopolize all my time, which is why I've been a little sparse with the comms lately. But that's going to be coming back. It's going to take me a while, but I'll get the light heavyweight lay of the land up, and we'll see how things shake out there.
Good luck.
And what my take is on things. I don't even know my own take on things right now, for a lot of it. But that'll be coming. Join us on the forums. We enjoy the feedback. Thanks to all those who sent emails about the 76 coverage. I appreciate those. I'm glad you enjoy it. So keep in touch and get on the forums and keep listening to the podcast. So, for Jerry Cataline, this is Sean Kennedy.